Holding, the call is now being recorded.
Thank you very much, Brian. Shall I do a roll call for you, Carlton?
Please do, Glenn.
Thank you. With pleasure. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Jazz Call on the 9th of August. And on the call, we have Carlton Samuels, Cheryl Langdonor, Alex Gokuru, Sintra Suknan, Carlos Aguirre, Sebastian Bachelet, Eric Williams, Eric Brenner Williams, Olivier Crepin Leblanc, Evan Labovich, Alan Greenberg, Avery Doria, and Krista Pepek. And from staff, we have Carla Valente, Wendy Prophet, myself, Glenda Saint-Géry, and we have apologies from Bodwan Shombi, Tijani Benjami, Elaine Pruis, and Dev Anand Tiluksing. If I've left anybody off, please tell me. And may I ask you please to say your name before speaking for the transcription purpose. Thank you very much. Over to you, Carlton, and we'll see if we can get Rafik on the line now.
Yes, I just had a note from him saying he's trying, the operator's just trying to get it. He's still having some issues. So
yes,
I will start the conversation.
Can I just say maybe Seth Green has been left off?
I was about to say
Sorry,
that.
Sorry, yes. Seth.
Seth is on the line. I was about to say that exactly. Thanks, Olivier.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. My co-chair is going to lead this discussion, but he's unfortunately having some issues getting voice contact. So I'm going to start until Rafik comes on. Thanks for showing up for this call. You see the agenda. Today we are proposing to look at the proposed support for eligible applicants. That's the main item on the agenda today. Just to mention, for those of you who still might not have lodged your SOIs, you know the rules, you know the drill. Please send it to staff so that it can be properly noted. We are 11 minutes after the hour, so I'm going to go straight into it. The content for today, proposed support to eligible applicants. You have the link in the email. You have the link in the Jazz, in the notes section. You can go and see the entire report. The content is actually loaded in the notes section of the Adobe Connect room. This is the focus for today's call. So the floor is open for your comments, concerns. Oh, before you say that, let me just reinforce, we are really trying very hard to help our script writers and staff to get this thing sorted out. If you make a comment here that is substantive or you believe is substantive, I'm still going to ask you to make the comment on the wiki, because that's the easier way for process for the writers to get to it and try to make sense of it. So whatever you say here on the call, if you feel it's substantive, if you feel it's important, it's material to the outcome, please just put it on the wiki. Seth, you wanted to say something.
If I may, Carlton, just take 30 seconds to point out, everyone received an email regarding where on the wiki these comments we'd appreciate the comments going, if that's possible. Rather than just actually editing the text of the final draft that is on the wiki, we're setting up a page to correspond to each section that we review in each meeting. And that's the link to that is right on the front page, the landing page of the wiki. When you first open it up, you can see that. It's also in the chat room here, and it's also been emailed around. So if you were to click on that link, you'll then get a series of dated wiki pages that correspond to the changes being reviewed in each meeting. And at the bottom of each one of those, we'd appreciate you using the add comment function. So you just click on add comment, and then at the bottom, you can write whatever wording you suggest or whatever substantive changes you suggest, and we'll be sure to review them. That's much easier than if you actually go into the actual the text that's in the body of the wiki and change it around without indicating where the changes are. This way we'll know exactly where they are. Thanks very much, Carlton. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Seth. So you have more clarifications for us to go on. So the pages 17 to 19 of the current draft final report, if you're looking at the big report, for those who are not on the Adobe Connect, if you're on the Adobe Connect, you can just look in the notes section and scroll through it. This is what we have. The floor is open. Alan, you have your hand up, sir.
I have a question regarding the important dates that are listed at the lower left of Adobe. There was some discussion of Olivier writing to the GNSO and asking, can they be more flexible in their dates, and so we don't have to have the report into them for the 1st of September and still have them give their answer in time for the Dakar meeting. Has there been any action on that, or are we still working to that date?
Well, Olivier has his hand up. He's on the floor, so we'll wait for him to answer. Olivier, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Carlton. Olivier, for the record. Yes, I have spoken, or rather emailed Stefan Van Gelder with Rafiq, carbon copied on this. There is a discussion where Rafiq would probably have to make a formal request to the GNSO, where we could replace or maybe delay the GNSO's meeting and have some kind of webinar that would advise GNSO council members on the actual report itself when it's written, so as to shorten the amount of time that it would take them to read it. The question is still really up in the air at the moment, and I don't believe that Rafiq has affected it yet, and I was going to follow up with him right after this call so as to try and see what we can do to give a little bit more time, maybe 5 or 10 days more, to the JAS group to finalize its report. Thank you.
Okay, because according to normal practice, the GNSO, if it was delivered for the September meeting, probably would not vote on it at that point. If one of the stakeholder groups requested a delay, as they almost certainly would, if they've only had a few days to look at it, it won't be approved till the end of or beginning of October anyway, which I think is one. Their next meeting is one day before the publication deadline. So,
Alan, okay. Olivier, again, does this make it better for us then in such
no.
a way?
No, it no. means we're going to have to rush to have it done by the end of August, and then it will probably sit there for a month with nothing happening. Probably.
That's
I can't guarantee that, but...
That's what I understood Alan to be saying. I'm not so sure it's...
Olivier, again, here, would you like me to inquire with Stefan and, of course, with Rafiq, copied, so as to what's likely to happen, so as not to rush the JAS group into something which will then sit on a shelf and gather dust?
Well, I mean,
that would be
I'm
good
not sure gathering
almost,
dust is the right word. But I would think a conversation at this point, since emailed, hasn't proven to be extremely effective.
Okay. All right, will do. Thank you.
Regardless of that, though, might I just suggest that we continue with this kind of pace?
Of course.
Just to make sure. So it's a good thing that we asked that, but I would also suggest that we just continue with this pace and we just have more time to clean it up at the end. So can I just ask some leading questions on this thing? I'm presuming that if we look at the fee reductions portion of the report as it is now, there is full consensus for waiving the program development costs, full consensus for lower risk contingency costs, full consensus that we are demanding a review of the base costs, full consensus that we, while we are suggesting that there be cost reductions to encourage a build-out of IDNs in smaller underserved languages without specifically suggesting how, full consensus on lower registry fees. Is it the sense of this group? Exemptions or deferment of IPv6 implementation requirements.
Evan.
Evan, your hand is up, sir.
Hello there.
Evan.
And it's nice to be back after having missed a bunch of meetings, so forgive me if I seem out of step in a couple of places. I wanted to address this in wondering, in the light of the recent ALAC-AC statement that doesn't give a lot of explanation but just says the fee should be reduced to $47,000 without necessarily giving a whole bunch of background information, would it be possible, or is it considerable, is it worth consideration for us to put in some kind of wording that says we support the recommendation and I'm not thinking the right words, but essentially we want to affect the cost reduction as requested in the GAC ALAC statement, and then rather than giving dollar figures besides lower risk contingency costs, cost base, and so on, so rather than saying review the cost base and give specific dollar amounts, and saying we agree with the GAC ALAC statement on reducing fees to $47,000, without giving dollar values, saying here are the areas
we think you can reduce it
is possible.
Okay, that's the statement on the board. Rather than go through and enumerating the reductions, we just say we want to reduce it to this level, and we just identify some areas where we think the slack can be removed. Alan, you have the floor. You're on the board, and then Avery.
Yeah, thank you. We spent a fair amount of time at the last meeting talking about whether we say the fee shall be or the fee shall be no higher than.
Yes.
And, you know, with the thought that if someone says they can afford $100,000, do we demand that we give that we only charge them $45,000 or $47,000? The original issue is brought up in the light of no matter how the funding of this overall thing is done, the fee reduction and other support, there's likely to be a finite amount. And do we want to follow the GAC advice?
I don't agree with that at all about saying there's a finite amount if there's an ability to reduce the fee.
Okay,
Evan. Not only
Evan, may I finish, please?
Okay.
Yeah, all I'm saying is at the last meeting there was a strong feeling that it should be no higher than.
Yes.
Sorry, I don't remember the exact wording. We agonized over the wording a fair amount, and someone came up with a proposal. I'm just saying, are we changing that, or are we going with that? I was asking a question. Thank you.
This is to Alan's suggestion. There was, in fact, some talk on this, and it went on for a while. But let me let Avery jump in here before I say what I think I understand was shaping up. Avery, you have the floor.
Sorry, this is Glenn. Just a quick note to say Rafik is on the call. Thank you.
Oh,
sorry, Avery.
Okay, no, thank you. A couple points. One is I think there's a distinction between what we were talking about last week and this GAC ALAC reduced fee to 47. What we were talking about last week was in terms of requirements for aid, we were only, we were saying that it wasn't necessary that they only be able to pay 47, that being able to pay more, et cetera, didn't necessarily bar them. And yes, implicit in that was perhaps that they would end up paying more. Another piece of the GAC-ALAC is I am not sure that there's complete coincidence between the people that this program serves and the people that are the specific classes designated by GAC-ALAC. I haven't really thought it through because there's where, certainly from the GAC, it was specific country designations. There was much more focused on that, I believe, versus the slightly wider group of developing economies and indigenous peoples and so on and so forth. So there may not be a complete overlap in the categories. The other thing that I wanted to say, and that I think may contradict or may be complementary to what Evan was saying in terms of just saying reduce it, that's the end of it, because GAC and ALAC have requested, was the inclusion of some form of the contribution that I put in on why we also think they can afford to do it. Because one of the things the board has always come back with, and I don't think the GAC and ALAC recommending that they drop it gets the board over this issue, is, yeah, but how do we do that and still meet the GNSO cover the costs? And I think that, you know, part of what I wrote goes to explaining that to some extent, or at least makes a possible story for explaining that. And I would think we still need to give the board that, because while I very much am in favor and very happy that GAC and ALAC said what they said, that is not necessarily the end of the story. And I don't think this group, just like I don't think this group should be chasing after the board to find out what they've decided, I don't think we should presume that the board is going to necessarily accept the GAC ALAC, though of course I hope they do. Thanks.
Okay. Alan, you're on the board, and then Evan is on the board. I am going to hand over after this to Rafiq, who is going to be calling the shots on this.
Okay. Yes, Avery, thank you. You answered the question I was asking. What we were agonizing over last week was the criteria, and just because someone can afford more than $45,000 doesn't mean that they're charged more. I mean, VeriSign can probably afford $1 million per application. They're still only going to be able to charged $185,000. So that was the differentiation, which I was in my semi-stupor right now. It's still early here. I've missed completely. Thank you. And by the way, I agree that we do need, in some excruciating detail and in a convincing way, need to explain to the board how they can reduce the fee without impacting the GNSO directive.
Thank you, Adan. Ivan?
Okay, so if I'm hearing Avery and Alan correctly, so there's not, so the issue here is not the fact that the recommendation from the GAC and ALAC is not like, but just what we're going to try and do here is explain how that can be achieved. I guess I found the criteria, the not more than, and so on. That had to do with what makes an applicant eligible as opposed to the benefits they're getting. That's why, and that's sort of what's confusing me, is that was out of the scope of this discussion. The discussion here that I'm seeing on the Adobe Connect room is what is the proposed support, and has nothing to do with the criteria. Assuming somebody meets the criteria, what do they get?
Yeah.
And so I've been focusing on that rather than saying what are they able to pay or
yeah,
whatever,
Evan,
because that seems to be a different discussion.
Evan, to make it clear, I raised what apparently was a red herring. I apologize for that, but the difference in the statements was bothering me. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So so I guess what is necessary to do here is, based on what I'm hearing from Ellen and Avery, is to go into a bit more of an explanation here that explains how, through waiving costs and reducing specific costs and so on, that we're able to achieve the kind of cost reduction, a fee reduction that is being asked for in the GAC-ALAC recommendation. In that, I'm going to have to sort of re-ask the people on this group whether or not we need more detail in these particular bullet forms, take out perhaps specific dollar amounts, but go into more detail about the kind of cost reductions that can be done to enable that that fee level that's been asked for. Thank you.
Thank you, Ivan. Eddie?
Thank you, Rafiq. Eric Werner-Williams for the record. I really support what Evan initially said, which was adopt the simple reference to the ALAC-GAC joint statement. And, of course, I have something to do with writing it, so I'm kind of attached to it personally. But the problem I see with attempting to provide suggestions as to how to realize the number is that we made some suggestions earlier against what we understand the budget to be, and Alan was very very helpful in obtaining those numbers, but we don't actually know enough. We don't know as much as staff does about how to achieve the particular end of 47 as the number for the applicant. We don't really know enough about ICANN's internal budget for the application process to truly instruct them how to arrive at that number, that is, to instruct the board better than staff is able to instruct them on the same question. So our time spent on that is answering a question for which the board has a better answer available to them, and the time taken away from answering questions for which the board has no better source of information than we. So we're spending time on something that we can't actually do very well. And Avery, if you want to explain, please do.
Okay, I think that Alan wants to answer, and he already made some comments in the chat. Alan?
Yeah, thank you. I think this is one of these cases where I think we need, and we're told we're going to get at more active involvement from staff, and I think a couple of board members wouldn't be useless either. If we're going to have an argument which is really going to be sold, there is no point in us making the argument which staff in parallel will go to and tell the board, no, it can't be done that way. So I think we need active involvement and creative involvement from staff on this one. If we end up differing completely, then we need to say that in the report. But if we can come to some closure on it quickly, then we're far better, far more ahead than we would be otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Avery?
Thank you. Yeah, I think we know more than, I think the staff has put out budget figures. True, they haven't done a total breakdown of within the 100,000 on the fee structure, how it indeed goes. But the staff has put out a lot of figures. We're no longer guessing. Second of all, unless someone is going to disagree with the proposal that I made for a method by which they could reduce this but still meet both short-run cash flow requirements and long-run budget requirements, and sort of want to say that what I wrote was complete nonsense and therefore we don't understand what we're talking about, I do believe there is a proposal on the table that gives at least one method of looking at budgets as put out by the staff, looking at the pieces, and looking at the times when certain amounts of money, assuming the truth and necessity of the staff's budget at $100,000, assuming the income that comes in from the applications and the proportionality of applications that we would predict possible for this, so certainly making certain assumptions. I definitely would love to have the staff and the board members take a look at that proposal. But to say that we have no idea and that the staff hasn't given us figures and that we shouldn't waste time doing it, A, I think time's already been wasted. We've done it. There is a proposal on the table, and I don't think we should drop it. Thank you.
Thank you, Avery. Okay, I will put myself in the queue. I'm sorry, but maybe I missed something in the whole discussion, as I joined later. But recalling all the debate about cost reduction, I want to ask what we are expecting to do in this matter. I think that there was some agreement that we cannot do any further progress in that matter. Maybe I missed something. So if someone can clarify that for me, that will be really helpful. Alan, yeah?
Yeah. Well, what I'm hearing is we have a proposal that Avery drew up, and what I'm saying is that it would be useful if staff tells us now, not privately to the only privately to the board later, that they either think it has some merit, or they reject it categorically, or somewhere in between, or can help us refine it. This is another of those cases that we don't want staff giving secret advice to the board that the working group doesn't know about. You know, it's the kind of thing that has been discussed in other fora before, and it would be useful to have some involvement on this particular rather crucial issue. That's the point I was making.
Thank you, Alan. So we have we had proposal from Avery, which was dropped by her in this call, but. Okay, sure, it's up to the working group member, so. Avery, yeah?
Yeah, and if I can add, I mean, that's been there for a long time. I've discussed it several times. I haven't gotten, you know, a lot of contradictions. I did get some requests for clarification and did some work. So, yeah, I think I totally agree from staff and board. Yes.
Avery, you cut out there.
Oh, okay. Am I back in?
Yeah.
As I said, it's been on the table a while. I've made some edits based upon our discussions, and I agree with Alan. I'd really like to get some feedback from board and staff on the practicality of it. Now, I'm not saying we need to do that before we put it in the report, and you know, I have no personal objection on it being, you know, an appendix perhaps and not in the mainstream of the document, but I do think that it is a proposal, you know, and I personally think it'll fly, and no one in this group has given me a reason why it wouldn't fly. The only possible reason would be, as far as I can tell, is for the board or staff to say, no, we don't want to do it that way. And then there'd be a problem. But other than that, I have not heard any reason why the temporal shift of funds that I suggest becomes problematic. So I'd love to hear some feedback, and I'd love to see it included in our document, even if it's not in the main flow of the document, but, you know, footnoted and then an addendum. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. I think it can be in the, the main report, not just in as appendix or footnote. Just we need to show the level of agreement from the working group. So it can be a recommendation, but just to highlight the level of consensus on that matter. I think that makes more sense. Just because I think that if it's just an appendix,
it's another reason.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Carlton, yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Rafik. You actually said what I'm glad we agreed on it. I think what we should do is to put it in the main body report. What we should probably try to elicit here is the level of support for it. But also, this is something Carla suggested, we can push to ask Kurt specifically in reference to Avery's proposal whether or not we can expect an answer from his side. So I'm suggesting that we take Avery's suggestion and make it a government of a question to Kurt. And I'm also suggesting that we solicit opinions on Avery's suggestion, because the proposal now is to make that a part of the official report. Thank you, Rafiq.
Thank you. Noted. I think we will proceed in the following slide. So Carla will send an email to the court. Okay. I think we have agreement about that. Hearing no objection. Okay. I think we can move. And continue the discussion about the proposal support. Ivan, do you have any comments? Because I am reading yours in the chat, so do you want to express some objection?
Rafiq, I'm just thinking we're talking in circles, and frankly, I'm getting tired of trying to mind read either staff or board or whoever. Yes, input would be nice, but the milestone report, too, has already been out. If there were comments or feedback or issues of practicality or whatever, if there was any kind of interest in helping us do this job, we'd have received that information already. So I think we have to proceed as if what we have is what we have, stop trying to mind read, stop waiting on other input, and just make the recommendations of what we think the community needs. That's what we're here for. If information comes later, that's fine. But at this point, everybody, including the board and senior staff, knows about the compressed timelines, and I think we're spinning our wheels needlessly.
Yeah, but just to clarify, you are not against that we put the recommendation in the report, just you are...
I'm not against offering a rationale of how we think that the fee reduction proposed by the GAC and ALAC could be realized. It is to our benefit to try and demonstrate how that fee reduction can be maintained while at the same time holding true to the GNSO mandate of cost recovery. That is useful. That is important. But going beyond that into trying to divine the current feeling or trying to figure out what staff may be or may not be telling the board privately or whatever, this is mind reading. Any kind of feedback I think that would have been given, we would already have in our hands, especially since everybody knows the compressed timelines. And I think we just need to work with what we have. It'd be nice to wish for more information, but we don't have it. So, you know, we need to move on.
Okay, thank you, Ivan. Anyway, we can send that email to go for task or clarification. Anyway. Okay. So I think we can move from the discussion about the cost reduction. Trying to read what is in the Adobe Connect. Okay.
There was some discussion. Can I say, Rafiq? There was some discussion about the staggered fees. I recall that we just need to make sure that everybody agrees. There's some consensus that the concept of staggered fees, even if we don't agree in the details, is accepted. So I would ask that question directly of members. There were long discussions about timing and so on with respect to the question of staggered fees. That if we just tie down the fact that there is full consensus on staggered fees.
I think maybe we are not asking if we have consensus about the staggered fees as a concept, but more how it will be proceed.
Yes.
We have Alan. Alan?
Yeah, are staggered fees nearly as relevant if the fees have been lowered to 47,000? Remember, before we said stagger the fees in the same way as they are refunded if the application does not go all the way through. That algorithm does not make any sense anymore unless we simply say prorate. And I question whether the need is nearly as large as it was when the number was 185 we were talking about. Thank you.
Precisely. Thank you, Alan. You answered my question, sir.
Well, I asked a question. I'm not sure I answered it.
Well, that's a question I was asking, and I don't think it's important anymore. I'm not sure everybody would agree with me.
I think Avery wants to comment, but she... Avery?
No, I was just trying to agree. That it doesn't seem like it's relevant as long as we've got the reduction in fees. It was an alternate procedure. So in the respect of expectations that we get the reduction in fees, I was completely agreeing with it no longer being a relevant issue. Thanks.
It would be relevant to say, should the fees not be fully reduced, that staggering is mandatory. It weakens our case by saying it, but it may need to be said in light of what may ultimately happen.
Yeah.
Can I tell you, Alan, I would prefer not to say that, but that's just me.
So we can keep that part, but just to make clarification that it's conditional. If there is no fee reduction, then... okay. I think so. Someone needs to mute his line.
Well, I can't, and it's my husband snoring at this hour. I can forgive him for that.
I thought it was a wounded bull elephant.
Sharon, this one tops the snake.
I'm sorry, Sharon. Anyone else likes to sleep with my husband and use a mute mic, feel free.
That's the first.
This one tops the snake.
Thank you.
However, I've knocked him on the shoulder for you, Rafiq, and he's rolled over, so he'll.
Yeah, that happens. It's really late, I think, in our part of the world, so I cannot complain. Okay, so I think we will keep this part, but just maybe to add some rewording that it's conditional to the fact if we have or not fee reduction, if I understood correctly what Alan was suggesting. Ivan, do you have any objection or something? I'm trying to... Okay, Avery? Yes, Avery? Avery, you can speak.
No, sorry. I was typing something and doing something screwy.
Yeah, because... Okay. That was funny. Just I was asking Ivan, yeah, because I'm saying his...
I'm saying let's move on, stop worrying about the speculation, and we've now got some information to go with.
Oh, okay. So the next part is about the partial refund from any action proceeds. maybe Avri have some comments on that matter. And okay, Eric, you are in the queue. Yeah, please go ahead.
Thank you, Rafik, Eric Brenner Williams. I have a clarifying question. Are we referring here, and I'm sure the answer is we're referring to something else, but the clarification might be useful. Are we referring to the proceeds from the auction in which the applicant who is supported is compelled to participate in and apparently has won, since they have paid the auction, the winning bid has been paid by the applicant to whoever, presumably to ICANN? Or are we speaking about the proceeds from auctions generally, not necessarily involving this or any JAS qualified applicants? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick. Maybe Avri can answer that. Avri?
Yeah, hi. I don't believe we ever talked about, and certainly not in this context, the notion of it being about fees for an auction the JAS qualified applicant participated in. In fact, I'm not sure we even covered the notion of how a JAS qualified applicant participates in an auction other than by having outside funding. I think what was being referred to here was repayment from the general deep coffers of wealth that we expect ICANN to get control of, based upon auctions for the very valuable names that people are going to compete on. And in this case, my suggestion would be that this is something that is perhaps referred to where we speak about things that the yet-to-be-formed board committee on how to handle auction monies should also look at, as opposed to declaring it as a thing that we want done with that money. My view and opinion on this is that the auction monies are something we're asking the board to take auction monies and come up with a way to use them in support of our community, especially the JAS qualified applicant community and going beyond. So I would think that this would be a bullet moved to that section of recommendations of things this committee could, should, might look at. Thank you.
Thank you, Avri. Ivan?
In line with that, Avri, this is a follow-up question. When we were first going through this, one of the feelings that I got from conversation that I'd had with board members is that the original anticipation is that fundraising, whether it was through auction or establishment of a fund or something like that, would be used to subsidize fees which would not be lowered. That is, applicants would still have to pay the $185, but eligible applicants would have access to pools of money achieved through auction and funds and other methods. Since we are now saying in the discussion we've just had that we are advocating a fee reduction, would it be appropriate perhaps to be able to change this slightly and say we have no problem with ICANN maintaining retaining some of its auction proceeds in order to recover some of the revenue loss from the fee reductions? This may be a different way of
Can I answer that?
I've asked it. Go ahead.
Right, yeah, but I'm not jump the queue to answer it.
Karthik, can she have a right of reply?
I'll just jump the queue. And
Go ahead, Avri.
First of all, that's already, there's two parts. One, we had a discussion, I think it was last week, where we said definitively that any monies to do with the fund and all of that were separate from, you know, the revenue reduction. But two, as part of the recommendation made on how the ICANN can afford to reduce these fees that I wrote up, is included using a first portion of the auction monies to refill the reserve fund and risk fund that is borrowed against by having these applicants not pay it. So indeed, that usage is already included in that proposal.
Okay, thank you.
Rafik, you are on. You dropped off. Maybe Rafik has a difficulty. Andrew, you are on the board, so just let me just call you in while Rafik comes back.
Thanks, Carlton. Andrew Mack for the transcript. I guess a comment and a question. The question is for Avery. I'm not quite sure I followed the very last part of what you said, so perhaps you could explain it. The comment is that I think that the fact that we're hoping to get fee reductions doesn't change the fact that there will be a need of additional resources to cover all kinds of things that are part of this program, including the administration of the program itself. I think everybody realistically knows that it's going to take more than $2 million to do this over the longer period of time. And the most logical, at least for me, the most logical source of front-end funding for that over the long term would be some of these auction proceeds. So I don't know whether that comes in addition to other funding that we might get from other sources or whether it's enough and it's easy enough to get in that it would cover all the costs of the program. But either way, I think that we shouldn't be looking to we shouldn't be walking away from that as a potential way of supporting the administration and some of the other costs that are going to be part of this program. Make sense? Thank you.
I think Rafik is still having a difficulty. So Evan, you're on the board next, and then Avery.
I think Evan's left some. The buzz is me.
Oh, does that? Well, okay, that's Avery. Avery, you on the board, please?
Okay, yeah. I think that the quick answer to Andrew would be yes. The suggestion was that auction monies at first be used to repay monies that didn't come in, but then part of what's being recommended for the auction funding and for this yet-to-be-formed fund is indeed finding ways to help people with funding the programs. Remember, we talked about the possibility of the registry service provider fund, or program, and we talked about various other things that are things that these auction monies could indeed be applied to, the program and whatever else. But we've tried to move those all into a big fund, big pile that says auction monies and other funds raised here go to the fund administrators, and they figure out based on 100 different suggestions of what's a good idea for them, what the really best ideas for them are. But that's not something we get into. But anything of those, whether it's registry support program, maybe someday registrar support programs, I don't know, whether it's supporting a fund, whether it's helping people run IPv6, I don't know. There could be 1,000 good proposals for ways to spend money to help Jazz qualified applicants. That's what the fund administration group does. The auction monies and any other monies raised go there, and then they figure out what's a good choice, what's a not good choice, what's a gaming choice, what's a whatever.
Mm.
So, yes.
Yeah, fair enough.
The long answer was yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Rafik is back, so he has the tiller again. Rafik?
He's on mute.
Oh. Would you please unmute him?
Yes.
Yeah, he's back.
Yeah.
You're in charge, sir.
That's it. Yeah. So, I tried to listen to when I joined the whole discussion.
So, can we move forward, or there is any other further comment on what Avri said? Okay, so I understand that was this discussion and the support program development section, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sorry, I have raised some problems today with my line. Okay. Can we move to the next part? I think it's about financial support distributed by external funding agencies. Okay. You have 30 minutes to discuss, as we there was agreement that we will have in Tuesday call of 1 hour and a half. Yes, Alan, it's 1 hour and a half. Okay. Any further comments? I am alone in this call or something.
No, you're not.
Okay.
We have a comment. We will jump in or we will put our hand up, I can assure you.
Okay, thanks. If I see that we don't have real... I'm just... Carlton, are you suggesting that we cut now or...
I see Eric has put something in the chat.
Eric, do you want to make some comments or?
Sure.
Yeah.
So we've been addressing the question of what to do with the auction fund from a conception that this is a possible source of revenue to fund the program. I'm actually thinking about a different question, which is the situation of the applicant who finds their application is in a contention set. And should the applicant not be as a community-based application and also not meet the 14 out of 16 metric, or not be brought by a party with a right to the name for which it is applying, such as a government other than a central government, then this applicant, though qualified for support in submitting an application, receives, at this point, no support in dealing with the other members of the contention set, which are better funded as a necessity. They didn't qualify for support in the first place, and those not necessarily so are speculative in nature or for some private interest which is external to the qualifying, the non-financial criteria for support. So in this case, we have a qualified applicant addressing some social purpose, whether it's linguistic or cultural. But it arrives at the moment of allocation by auction with no resources that arise from support. And so this is, we haven't dealt with the structural, the disadvantage that is faced by applicants from developing economies, and that any applicants who meets the recommendation 20 criteria are still structurally disadvantaged by the auction process, and we haven't come up with anything that addresses that. Thank you very much.
That's a very interesting point.
It's a very interesting point. And this is the third time, but, and my county's raised it.
I'm not keeping count.
It's the third time I'm keeping count. When it was raised the first time, Cintra made a note on the list, Eric, and she says, well, you know, for legal support, then we're assuming that that is some kind of support that would get legal, although we didn't name it out there. But I read this thing to mean that it's a little bit more than legal support that you were referring. And I didn't think it was fully answered then, but I wasn't so sure what else, because, I mean, in the auction thing, you're in the list, you're in the line, you show up for the auction, you win, then you get some support to pay for the costs and so on. But there might be other things that would be involved, you know, the marketing, all of those things. I don't know. But I think it is a real issue.
Well, one possible choice is to change the allocation mechanism. So let us assume there's a contention set that consists of two or more applications, one of which is JAS qualified, and the other one is not. Mm-hmm. If the allocation mechanism is unchanged, that is, it is auction, and there's no support to the JAS qualified applicant for auction, then we can assume that the auction will go to the non-qualified applicant. And we can mm-hmm. assume that as a general rule that any contention set with a JAS qualified applicant in it will be the string will be allocated to a non-qualified applicant, and all such JAS qualified applicants will lose their application at that point, and all investment made by the program as well as by the applicant will be lost at that point, subject to some possible refund conditions. If we propose to the board that this allocation mechanism cannot be fixed, or an alternative is to change mechanisms, for instance, that the allocation be by lottery, by random, as toss of a coin, then there is no structural there is no certainty that the JAS qualified applicant will
get it.
The outcome. Mm-hmm. And I think what we want to do is address the problem of the certainty of loss.
If there's contention, I think that's I actually think so. So if you had some kind of lot drawing, then it's a 50-50 chance, or however many of them there are in there, you'd break it down that way, the risk.
There's no certainty that the JAS qualified applicant will lose when attempting to acquire a string for which there is some other party that wants the string. So to use the shoe example, not that it's a very good one, but it's likely to have two or more applicants. All such strings will go to non-JAS qualified applicants unless we solve this problem.
Eric? I have a question for you. We are in case that many applicants will go for auction for a string, but which make this string viable if it, and so I'm just wondering if it can be really in the case of community-based something like that application, because what make a string really valuable? So if it's really business oriented, I think it mostly excludes any kind of support for applicants for that string, as we also highlighted the public interest criteria. So I'm just wondering if we can really have such situation. Maybe it can't be really exceptional or really specific.
Well, if that's a question, Rafiq, it seems to assume that all strings applied for by JAS qualified applicants will fall outside of the universe of strings for which there are other applicants. And I don't know that a social purpose applicant from the Central Africa won't pick a three-character string in Latin that is also sought by a for-profit business in North America. I don't know that won't happen. And I think that what you're assuming is that can't happen.
this is not, I cannot really say, assuming that it would or not happen, but just asking in which cases. So, especially with the criteria that we set up. Anyway, just more question, but I'm not assuming anything. And we have Alan and Evan in the queue. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean... Sorry,
this is Sandra. Can you please add me to the queue as well?
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, the issue that Eric brings up, I think, is relevant. I'm not sure how we address it. Early on in this process, we said, I think definitively, but I won't guarantee that, that we were only looking at applicants to be eligible if they are looking at non-contentious TLDs. Now, that doesn't stop someone from having the same letters but having two different meanings, and therefore it's not a contentious TLD in terms of the intent. And we're really in a problem in that if we're looking at granting support prior to application, as we implicitly are if we're saying the fee is reduced, then there's no way to predict ahead of time that we're guaranteeing that there is no contention. So early on we said there we should only consider those with no contention, a situation which is impossible to predict at this point. So I don't have any suggestions on how to answer the issue, but I think the fact that it could occur is something we need to address, or someone needs to address. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. We have Ivan. Ivan?
Yeah. I'm going to have to defer to others that may actually be more familiar with the DAG at this point, but I was under the impression that if there is a contention between a community application and a non-community application, that the community application automatically gets preference. Is that correct or not?
Only if 14 out of 16.
Yes. That was it.
Okay. So as far as I'm concerned, personally, I'm happy to allow for that to kick into place to deal with this issue, because most of the JAS qualified applicants are coming in to try and serve an underserved community or an underserved language or an underserved culture, and aren't just trying to be a conventional GTLD, but they don't have the money to do it. So I'm counting on the fact that most of the Rec 20 applications are going to come in based on attempts to serve communities and will therefore come in as community applications. And then if there is contention between a community application and a non-community application, personally I would prefer to deal with it on that level using the existing applicant guidebook mechanisms. If you have two different community applications, one of which is JAS qualified and the other one is not, that may be a different question. But personally, I'm satisfied with most of the mechanisms that already exist in the applicant guidebook for dealing with the distinction between a community application and a non-community application. If we need to deal with something, personally, I would only care about a situation where you had a non-qualified community application versus a qualified one. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan. Sintra, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Rafiq. I recognize what Evan is saying, but I think we also need to consider the fact that these are two parallel processes that we're building in, and while our applicants will fall under community base, they still do require a certain level of support from us in terms of how to deal with contention and any other aspects of the DAG that they may fall into, any other flows that they may actually enter into along the process. So I think we do have to analyze the DAG and see what aspects of each step that they can either potentially fall into and provide some level of support, even if it's minor, at least to make them aware of the fact that contention may exist. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Eric?
Thank you. If we had made the 14 out of 16 part of our definition for qualified support, then this question wouldn't arise.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't. We actually allowed for some applicants who don't meet the 14 out of 16. In fact, we made no reference, no dependency upon the 14 out of 16 as part of what it means to be qualified. So, overlooking the fact that the 14 out of 16 is quite difficult, we don't even know if the .CAT application would meet it today, we did allow that there would be things other than community-based applicants that could be supported. There was repeated reference throughout the course of the working group to commercial applications in small markets, and I don't recall the language exactly, but it certainly was outside of the model of a community-based application meeting the 14 out of 16. So that's one issue, is that we didn't actually rely upon the 14 out of 16, and therefore our requirement doesn't match exactly with this exit scenario from allocation by auction for applications that find themselves in a contention set. The other part of this is, again, we know what we need to know we can't know until it's too late. So when we, not only do we not know when the contention sets are, what applications will be in contention sets at the time that we support them, which is, you know, at application time, but also the evaluation of a community-based application to see if it meets the 14 out of 16 criteria happens much later as well. So we can't know in advance what would be useful to know in order to rely simply upon the 14 out of 16 in order to make the decision as to what to do. So we have a class of applicants that aren't community-based, or even if they are, don't rise to the 14 out of 16 standard. They are qualified for support, and it's possible that they will find themselves in a contention set with some other non-qualified application. They will lose because there's no support for them as a general rule. What do we do? Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Okay. Any comments? Any further comments on that? It looks really...
Can I suggest,
yeah.
Alan has his hand up again.
Yeah, question really is, are we willing to live with that as an outcome? If we are, then we have no problem. If we aren't, then we need to address it. But the real question is, it's a situation which seems to be no obvious answer. Is it a situation which we think rare enough that we're willing to live with the outcome? I'm done.
Maybe Shirid wants to answer that.
Thank you, Rafiq. Cheryl Langdonor for the transcript record. I'd take it slightly further than Alan, but build on what Alan has just said, and that is, I see no reason why we cannot raise this issue as a hanging question, because I believe it is it's an important one. But it is one that perhaps deserves to be highlighted as an important question, not one that the working group was mandated with specifically answering, one that we have recognised, if we do indeed recognise it as needing to be answered, worth debating and discussing in the wider ICANN community. I don't think we'll come up with, something clever between now and final report. It may be that something as, in inverted commas, simple as in the implementation of what comes out of the JAS work group may rely more closely on a marking out of the 16 being met. Note, I wasn't being specific to what's in the current DAG there. It is something that I think we need to be aware of. Also, in my mind, just for the record, I've tried to keep applicant support very much to the entry to processing of an application phase. And these discussions take us well into the processing of the application phase. So there is a sort of a pre and a post point. I think being aware that there are pre-points we've dealt with and post-points that we are aware of is still worthy of mentioning in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheryl. Eric?
Thank you. Eric Brenner-Williams. The allocation mechanism, which ICANN selected, they selected because it's fair, and I'll put that in quotes, but it's a fair mechanism, or it's an allocation mechanism that was selected because of its purported fairness. Between unsupported applicants, the question of whether or not it is its property of fairness is retained when the applicant pool that it is making allocations among is a mixture of supported and unsupported applicants is a question that hasn't been addressed. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, just I want to ask Alan what he mean by there be dragon there at
that's a nomenclature they used to show up on very ancient maps. That mariners would draw, you know, saying there's a part of the ocean that we haven't explored because there's dragons there. Or
unknown,
they found his
territory,
dragons.
Unknown territory, and they're afraid.
The expression was supposed to there be dragons there that would show up on maps.
Yeah, I learned that about 30 years ago, for Christ's sake. 40 years ago, almost.
Okay.
You recommend the exact wording.
Actually, Evan, I couldn't agree with you more. I think to have dragons there is just perfect wording.
See what you did, Alan? You got Evan woken up.
It may be the only thing I've said in this whole meeting that people agree with.
No, a little more than that.
Actually, I think my wording is not quite right because I don't think there's two there's in the statement.
No, there's no there and there, but we know exactly what you mean. We know what you mean.
Action item to Seth, get the exact wording off an ancient map and use it as a reference point.
Okay, well, that's a little fun.
Okay, guys. Do we suggest some rewarding, or do we need to? I'm not sure about the timing. If we have enough time to work in finding some solution, or just we.
Okay, Rafiq, Sheryl again without her hand. Unless anyone wants to disagree with me, what I have put on the table is we recognise there is risk. We recognise there be dragons there. We don't try and do a solution, but we do agree that a clear mention in the report of this during processing issue as opposed to pre-application processing ability to even put your application in because you are now a supported applicant is one that needs to be considered.
Thank you, Sheryl, for the suggestion. That makes sense for me. And so I think we can use what you suggested as exactly that exact wording, or maybe wording, or maybe work on that. So I hope that Wendy could take note of that. Eric?
Thank you, Rafiq. I'm not quite as sanguine or unconcerned as my colleagues on the call. I think that we should observe that no commercially attractive string can, under our proposed implementation of Recommendation 20, be allocated to anyone other than an applicant from the first world or a highly capitalized applicant, however one chooses to express that. And that that is unfortunate. Thank you.
So noted, Eric. I agree with you. Value is in the name of value of the beholder. Agree with you 100%.
Yeah, Carlton, you have Alan in the queue. Maybe you want to comment.
I'm sorry, Rafik. Alan has a queue.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think Cheryl said what Eric said, although he said it more bluntly. But Cheryl added the concept that maybe someone will have a marvelous idea how to address it. But I agree. I think that's the conclusion. We should note it. You know, maybe we need a section on implementation issues because there may well be other things that fall into that category that we've brushed under the table. But I don't think we have any choice at this point but to note it and go on. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. I think we are at least sending a warning about that issue, but we are not sure that we can find solution now in such tight time. But we recognize that there will be here be dragons.
And it may be the case that this is simply one of the situations that we cannot fix. But if we're leaving the world a better place than when we came into it, even if we can't fix everything, so be it.
Way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Alan. Okay. So at least we have that proposal of wording from Cheryl. Maybe if, I don't know, maybe if Eric wants to propose other rewarding, that would be really welcome. I'm trying to read what Ivan is replying to Eric in the chat. Okay. Okay. We have still 5 minutes left in this call, and so just asking if there is any further comment or question that we can address in these 5 minutes.
Can I, sorry, Rafik, I should have put my hand up.
Yes, Cheryl, yeah, please, yeah.
Thank you, Cheryl Langdon, for the transcript record. Earlier on in the call, Carlton ran down the list on the, under the pages 17 and 19 of the current final draft report under financial support relief from ICANN and made a set of we believe this is consensus, this is consensus, this is consensus. Can I ask that exact set of yay or nay on consensus go specifically to the list between now and the email list between now and the meeting later in the week so that those who are not on the call can weigh in on the those issues. If we get no response to some of them, then my comfort zone is relatively significant and firm on the consensus. If we get some minor, ooh, I'm not sure's, then we need to move from full consensus to one of the other categories, et cetera, et cetera. But we have not gone through what is a more formal call for consensus practice, and we don't have the luxury of time to do so because of the nature of how the report is being put together. But I would like to, I'm not really thinking about SurveyMonkey, Evan. I'm thinking even less formal than that and just to the regular email list. I think any survivor of the recommendation 6 working group or indeed the the poll survivors from the separation registry. Separation would shudder at that, but a simple take what is in the notes section of the Adobe Connect room and say at this meeting it was believed that we did have consensus on the following. Does anyone disagree with that? If so, speak now, i.e. before the Friday meeting, or forever hold your peace. Thank you.
Thank you. I do agree with you, Shirin, in that matter. So we will send emails now and prior to the Friday call. But just about SurveyMonkey, I think we did that before in the, here in Jazz. And what I saw as outcome led me really reluctant to use it again, because there is a risk that some people don't like the results and will question, make a lot of question about the survey outcome. So let's not go in a real heavy process. I think sending emails and waiting for people objection or comments can be more more relatable, strangely, more than using SurveyMonkey, which led to have some critics and the last time that we used it in the Jazz Working Group. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, I don't remember whether, according to our charter, we're bound to using the GNSO Working Group rules. I presume that we are, but I don't know that for sure. They do specify that one cannot make a formal consensus call purely on a teleconference. And working groups over the last year or so have generally agreed that if one puts out an email call and don't get any negative comments, we can deem it to be consensus. So I think that's a reasonable way to go. Thank you.
Exactly, Alan, and I was drawing on many years now of painful experience of both doing that and building it into the draft that's now adopted. Yep.
Thank you, Shay. Thank you, Alan. So we have agreement on the process to follow, and hopefully Wendy, that she is going to send it to the list. So they should summarize all the notes and send them to the list. So, and we can use that to confirm about consensus. So if nobody objects, we can assume that we have the consensus. Okay. Now it's 1 hour.
It's ended.
Hour and yes, Judith?
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, who was speaking?
This is Intro. I'm sorry. I just got disconnected and reconnected. Sorry.
Okay. No problem, Intro. Okay. Just now, we have 1 hour and 31 minutes in the hour call. I think we agreed about the process to follow for the consensus. I don't think that we have any other point that we can discuss. And it's, this call is more longer than usual, so I think maybe it's time to end it. And I want to thank everybody for joining the today call. So if there is any objection, okay. So 1, 2, 3. Okay, hearing none, I can call this. This call is adjourned for today. Thank you, everybody, and. I want to say to Shirin, please be careful with the snakes. Okay.
Oh, my snakes are no problem at all. It's much more dangerous dealing with ICANNers.
Yes, we have interesting wildlife in ICANN, yeah.
But, Cheryl, that's only because some of us are venomous.
Oh, yes, but darling, so am I.
And she has snakes on top of that. Thank you all. See you all.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Brian.